there in Port-au-Prince, and turn to Daniel chapter 1, please. Daniel chapter 1. Daniel is the last of what is known as the major prophets. Isaiah, Jeremiah, Lamentations, Ezekiel, and Daniel are all considered major prophets. The remaining 12, Hosea on, are what are called minor prophets. I'm not exactly sure how that designation arose, but yeah, maybe because the focus of some of the others, the minor prophets, is more narrow, possibly. They are shorter for the most part than the major prophets, so that could be a factor in that as well, but that's the way it's divided up. That's the way they're called. Daniel was written, of course, by Daniel. Daniel was among the captives that were taken from Jerusalem when Babylon, the king of Babylon, came and captured the southern kingdom of Judah, carried them captive. He was probably about 15 years old when he was captured. 15 years old, taken from his homeland, taken from everything that he is familiar with, to a strange land, a strange people, and raised up as one of them. Daniel lived for the entire 70-year captivity. He saw the coming of the Babylonians. He lived through that entire captivity, and then he saw the return to the land under Ezra and Nehemiah. Got to see the whole thing, but then he saw some visions along the way, some things that looked further into the future, for the future yet for us as well. The Babylonian captivity took place about 586 BC. There were three attacks against Israel by the Babylonians before they actually were able to successfully conquer the country. And also keep this in mind, that the lives of Jeremiah and Ezekiel, as well as some of the minor prophets, but specifically these two prophets, overlap that of Daniel. It's very possible that Daniel might have even known Jeremiah and Ezekiel personally. I can't say that for certain, but it is within the realm of possibility. Let's go ahead and read verses 1 and 2 here of Daniel chapter 1 and then go on to some more background in this. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem and besieged it. That means they just camped around the thing. They've shut off supplies coming in. They've kept people from going out. They've built a barrier around it with armies. They besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with part of the vessels of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar to the house of his God. And he brought the vessels into the treasure house of his God. So they go in, they take everything that's worth taking, and they destroy everything else before they leave. Go to 2 Chronicles chapter 36. So Daniel starts with the taking of the country by the Babylonians, and that's where 2 Chronicles ends up. 2 Chronicles chapter 36, and begin in verse 5. 2 Chronicles 36:5. Jehoiakim was 20 and 5 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 11 years in Jerusalem. Let me just stop for a moment. Jehoiakim is the son of Josiah. Josiah was one of the most godly kings that the southern kingdom of Judah had over them. When he became king at 8 years old, he reigned like David. He led the nation to revival, turning back to God and restoring many things that had been destroyed throughout that. Probably there were 4 revivals as total throughout the history of the southern kingdom of Judah. Josiah led the last one, the 4th one. So Jehoiakim now is his son. And that's important. I'll go on and fill some more details in on that in a little bit here. But just keep that in mind, that Josiah is the father. Now Jehoiakim takes over, reigns for 11 years. And he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord his God. Against him came up Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, bound him in fetters to carry him to Babylon. So this son of Josiah is reigning king when the Babylonians come in, and he's carried captive. Nebuchadnezzar also carried the vessels of the house of the Lord to Babylon and put them in his temple at Babylon. Now the rest of the acts of Jehoiakim and his abominations which he did, and that which was found in him, behold, they are written in the book of the kings of Israel and Judah. And Jehoiachin, his son, reigned in his stead. Jehoiachin was 8 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 3 months and 10 days in Jerusalem, and he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord. And when the year was expired, King Nebuchadnezzar sent and brought him to Babylon with the goodly vessels of the house of the Lord, and made Zedekiah his brother king over Judah and Jerusalem. So Daniel is watching all this. He lived through this entire thing to see the king come in here and take this. Let's jump over to 2 Kings 24, mentioned here in Chronicles. 2 Kings 24, and just to see the connection between these things. Basically, the difference between Samuel and Kings and Chronicles is Samuel and Kings is the history of the entire nation of Israel. Chronicles, 1 and 2 Chronicles, focuses upon the kings of Judah only. The kings of Israel are mentioned, but it focuses on the kings of Judah, whereas Samuel and Kings gives the entire history of both kingdoms throughout that thing. But here in 2 Kings, in chapter 24, verse 1. In his days, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came up, and Jehoiakim became his servant 3 years. Then he turned and rebelled against him. So this Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, first Babylon gets some control over there. For 3 years he has that. And then after that, Jehoiakim decides to rebel against it. Verse 2, and the Lord sent against him bands of the Chaldees and bands of the Syrians and bands of the Moabites and bands of the children of Ammon, and sent them against Judah to destroy it according to the word of the Lord which he spake by his servants the prophets. Now go to Jeremiah chapter 52. Jeremiah chapter 52. And see, all these passages are fitting together. All these passages dealing with the same period of time. And let me just throw this out there because I don't remember if this is mentioned here or not. The first of Josiah's sons to reign was a man by the name of Jehoahaz. So in Josiah's place, the righteous king of Judah, his first son to become king in his place is Jehoahaz, who lasted 3 months. He was conquered by the Egyptians. The Egyptian king then took Jehoiakim and made him king over Judah. His name was Eliakim prior to that. So now you've got the second son of Josiah who's reigning over the nation of Israel, the southern kingdom of Judah. After Jehoiakim, Jehoiachin became king. That's when the Babylonian captivity took place. But then, after the Babylonians captured it, they removed Jehoiachin, the grandson of Josiah, took him to Babylon, and made Zedekiah, another son of Josiah, king over the southern kingdom of Israel. Judah, the southern kingdom of Israel. So three of the last four kings over the nation of Judah were sons of Josiah. Jehoahaz, Jehoiakim, and Zedekiah, but then a grandson also reigned in that time as well. Now let's go to Jeremiah chapter 52. And we read about the last of these kings who became king in the place of Jehoiachin, the grandson of Josiah. So his uncle Zedekiah then becomes king. And again, Daniel is watching all of this. Zedekiah was 120 years old when he began to reign. He reigned 11 years in Jerusalem. And his mother's name was Hamutal, the daughter of Jeremiah of Libna. And he did that which was evil in the eyes of the Lord, according to all that Jehoiakim had done. That's his brother, the one whose son he had taken the place of. Verse 3, for through the anger of the Lord it came to pass in Jerusalem and Judah, till he had cast them out from his presence, that Zedekiah rebelled against the king of Babylon. So there's still some resistance going on, but here's the problem with all of this. As you go through the book of Jeremiah, Jeremiah is preaching about what's going to take place, what's going to happen because of the evil, not only of the sons of Josiah, but of the father of Josiah, Manasseh. Manasseh reigned for 55 years, the longest any king ever reigned over the southern kingdom of Judah. He was also by far the most wicked. And God pronounced a judgment upon the nation of Judah because of the sins of Manasseh. Josiah was a stay to that judgment. But still, the people of Israel are going to suffer for their sins. And God removed Josiah before this judgment came, because Josiah was a righteous man. So this Jeremiah has been preaching. He says, look, when the Babylonians come, you're not to resist them, because Nebuchadnezzar is my servant. He's my instrument to chastise you for your wickedness. And he says, you guys just surrender to him. You guys just let it happen, because I've decreed this. They resist the thing. They fight against it. They go to the Egyptians for help, and instead of obeying God. So Zedekiah here, in rebellion against what Jeremiah prophesied and said they were to do, rebels against him. Verse 4. It came to pass in the ninth year of his reign, in the tenth month, in the tenth day of the month, that Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came, he and all his army, against Jerusalem, and pitched against it, and built forts against it round about. So the city was besieged under the 11th year of King Zedekiah. And in the fourth month, in the ninth day of the month, the famine was sore in the city, so that there was no bread for the people of the land. So Daniel's still in Jerusalem when this is happening. He is suffering this famine with everybody else in the city. Verse 7, then the city was broken up, and all the men of war fled, and went forth out of the city by night by the way of the gate between the two walls, which was by the king's garden. Now the Chaldeans were by the city round about, and they went by the way of the plain. But the army of the Chaldeans pursued after the king, and overtook Zedekiah in the plains of Jericho, and all his army was scattered from him. Then they took the king and carried him up into the king of Babylon, to Riblah in the land of Hamath, where he gave judgment upon him. And the king of Babylon slew the sons of Zedekiah before his eyes. He slew also all the princes of Judah in Riblah. So he's rebelled. He's been tried to escape. He's been caught. The Babylonian king brings him in, and in front of Zedekiah kills all of his sons and all the princes of Judah. One of the last things that Zedekiah sees is his sons being killed and the ravaging of the nation of Judah. Verse 11, then he put out the eyes of Zedekiah. And the king of Babylon bound him in chains and carried him to Babylon and put him in prison till the day of his death. Can you imagine that? The last thing that you ever see before your eyesight's taken out is your children killed right before your eyes. And then carried in chains and kept captive. And for the rest of Zedekiah's life, that is the last image burned into his brain. And for the rest of his life, that's what he sees. This is the cruelty of these people. Think about that. There's people still like that today. As cruel as that today. And people want to say, well, you know, we need to be forgiving and so forth. Well, yes, we do to a point as individuals. But nations are supposed to bear the sword. Nations have a responsibility to protect their citizenry. That's what Romans 13 says. The rulers are appointed of God, and they're not to bear the sword in vain. Well, let's read on here. Verse 12. Now in the fifth month, in the tenth day of the month, which is the 19th year of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came Nebuchadnezzar, captain of the guard, which served the king of Babylon, into Jerusalem, and burned the house of the Lord, and the king's house, and all the houses of Jerusalem, and all the houses of the great men, burned he with fire. They're just destroying everything of any value, after they've taken out of it what they want. And Daniel, as probably about a 15-year-old boy, is witness to all of this taking place. And let me add, this is after 70 years of lying dormant. This is what Nehemiah and Ezra returned to. The destruction left behind by the Babylonians. Verse 14, and all the army of the Chaldeans that were with the captain of the guard break down all the walls of Jerusalem round about. Then Nebuchadnezzar, the captain of the guard, carried away captive certain of the poor people and the residue of the people that remained in the city and those that fell away that fell to the king of Babylon and the rest of the multitude. But Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, left certain of the poor of the land for vine dressers and for husbandmen. Let's go to Lamentations chapter 1. Because it goes on and describes some more things that took place there, but I think I've covered most of what I want to there. But Lamentations is written by Jeremiah. So, not only does Daniel experience all of this, so did Jeremiah. Jeremiah sees the fulfillment of what God had told him was going to happen. Jeremiah is called the weeping prophet. He saw all this, and he tried to warn the people, and they just rejected him. They rejected his message because it wasn't what they wanted to hear. Now, who wants to hear the Russians are coming and we're not to fight against them? We just need to surrender and let them do what they want. So in a sense, I can understand the people of Israel, but at the same time, God said, look, you've earned this. You just surrender. That was Jeremiah's message. So now he writes in chapter 1 of Lamentations, verse 1, how doth a city sit solitary that was full of people? How has she become as a widow, she that was great among the nations and princess among the provinces? How has she become tributary? Because under David and Solomon, Israel was a world power. And now they've been reduced to being conquered. First reduced to just a small city from the great mighty nation that they had been, and then finally that city itself is conquered and destroyed. Verse 2, she weepeth sore in the night, and her tears are on her cheeks among all her lovers. She hath none so to comfort, none to comfort her. All her friends have dealt treacherously with her. They are become her enemies. Everything that Israel looked, everyone who ever Israel looked to help, turned against them. Judah is gone into captivity because of affliction. Because of the great servitude, she dwelleth among the heathen. She findeth no rest. All her persecutors overtake her between the straits. The ways of Zion do mourn, because none come to the solemn feasts. All her gates are desolate. Her priests sigh. Her virgins are afflicted, and she is in bitterness. Her adversaries are the chief. Her enemies prosper. For the Lord hath afflicted her for the multitude of her transgressions. Her children are gone into captivity before the enemy. And from the daughter of Zion all her beauty is departed. Her princes are become like harts that find no pasture. And they are gone without strength before the pursuer. Jerusalem remembered in the days of her affliction and of her miseries all her pleasant things that she had in the days of old when her people fell into the hand of the enemy and none did help her. And the adversaries saw her and did mock at her Sabbaths. Jerusalem hath grievously sinned. Therefore she is removed. All that honored her despise her because they have seen her nakedness. Yea, she sigheth and turneth backward. Her filthiness is in her skirts. She remembereth not her last end. Therefore she came down wonderfully. She had no comforter. O Lord, behold my affliction, for the enemy hath magnified himself. The adversary hath spread out his hand upon all her pleasant things. For she hath seen that the heathen entered into her sanctuary, whom thou didst command that they should not enter into the congregation. All her people sigh. They seek bread. They have given their pleasant things to meat to relieve the soul. See, O Lord, and consider, for I am become vile. Just grieved as he's watched this whole thing taking place. And those valuable, many of the valuable vessels out of the temple itself that Babylonians entered in there and took those things and carried them to Babylon. All the gold and the silver and the precious stones and so forth. They took it all, took it away, and left the city in ruins. And those are the conditions when Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are taken and carried captive to the city of, to the country of Babylon. Any questions or comments on any of that thus far? Okay, let's go back to Daniel chapter 1 now. Let's go ahead and read verses 1 and 2 once again. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem, besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand. See, God has backed off. That protection has been removed. He says, there you go, Nebuchadnezzar, my servant. You can have him. Gave him into his hand. With part of the vessels, of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar to the house of his God. And he brought the vessels into the treasure house of his God. Those precious things get taken captive And then Nebuchadnezzar sets him up in the house of his own God as a treasure, as a badge of what they've accomplished. Ha! That great nation Israel? Where are they now? Look, see that? That's their God's stuff. We got it next to our gods. It's ours. Verse 3. And the king spake unto Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel, the king's seed, and of the princes, children in whom was no blemish, well favored, skillful in all wisdom, and cunning in knowledge, and understanding science, and such as had ability in them to stand in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. I want the brightest and the best. You bring them in. You find them. These with all this understanding, this knowledge, the children of princes and the king's seed. We don't just want the common laborers' kids. We don't want any slaves' children. We want the best. I want you to bring them, and we're going to teach them the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans, indoctrinate them and groom them for leadership. Verse 5. And the king appointed them a daily provision of the king's meat, and the wine which he drank, so he nourishing them 3 years, that at the end thereof they might stand before the king. So for 3 years these guys are being prepared, they're being nourished. They have been delivered from a famine. For several years, Babylon had the king, the city of Jerusalem shut up. They've been scraping along with whatever they could find, scrounging. And now these select few are pulled in and set up. And man, they've got a spread put before them like you can't begin to imagine. The best, the finest foods and beverages. And for 3 years, they're taken care of, they're pampered, they're nourished, they're exposed. It's all part of the indoctrination, the trying to impress them, trying to curry their favor, and sway their opinions because of what they've experienced and what they've seen before they were brought in here. Verse 6. Now among these are the children of Judah, Daniel, Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah. So that tells us that these four guys are not just average Judeans. They're king's seed, children of princes, the brightest and the best in the land among those that are brought down here into the kingdom of Babylon, kept physically healthy and hopefully impressed and persuaded by all that's taken place here. And it's interesting, and I'm not sure what to make of this, but Daniel is the only one that retains his Jewish name. They all get a new name, but their Jewish names are Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Verse 7, unto whom the prince of the eunuchs gave the names, for he gave unto Daniel the name of Belteshazzar, and to Hanani of Shadrach, and to Mishael of Meshach, and to Azariah of Abednego. Again, I don't know what the distinction, the reason for that is, but there's different names given here. He's removed their connection, trying to remove everything connecting them back to what they were, and grooming them now to be a part of the great country of Babylon, separating them from their culture and from all that would connect them back to that. Verse 7, Well, let's stop there. Any questions or comments on any of that thus far? Sarah. Well, if he was 15 at the captivity, he'd be about 18 at this point. Because it was 3 years that they nourished him and groomed him and prepared them.
Okay. And all that, the stuff that you read about the kings, you know, this king reigned for this amount of time, that happened after this point, or before this point.
That was before.
Okay, so it was a short window that happened, them changing hands, because Daniel was captured before the king started changing.
No, he was captured after. So, you know, who was the first one? Jehoahaz was 3 months. Jehoiakim reigned 11 years. So when Jehoiakim began reigning, Daniel would have been, if he was 15 when captured, then he would have been 3 when Jehoiakim began to reign. So he probably would not remember Jehoahaz because he'd only been about 3 years old. But then Jehoiachin only lasted 3 months as well. So, there's a real rapid turnaround there as far as kings go. Jehoiakim, the middle one, reigned the longest, and then Zedekiah, of course, was made king, but then immediately had his eyes put out and was taken captive, or, you know, within a couple years or something like that. So, I don't know. I'm going to guess so, but I really can't give you a good answer on that. And I think it would be safe to say probably they were relatively the same age. Because and it almost seems like they were kind of old too. Because, I mean, a 15-year-old, they are set in some things. Well, they're set in a lot of things, really, but...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. But, well, I guess it's not all that unusual. You think about what's ISIS do? That's probably about the age that they're targeting. And they seem to be fairly successful in convincing them to go along. So I guess it's not that beyond the realm of possibility that at that age they could be swayed. And again, after having gone through the famine and 3 years of being just treated, so well and everything, that, I guess it makes sense. Anyone else? Pam.
Okay, so Babylon besieges them, but have they come in and really taken over? Because they're letting the king line still come down through.
Right. They've just kind of set up barriers around the city. They've shut it off. It was a common tactic that they would do. They would surround the city so that they couldn't get supplies in. And the idea is let's get them to surrender so we don't have to lose any of our own men in a conquest. Or at least wear them down so that the point when it comes to battle, it's going to be a cakewalk instead of having to, fight against, men that are readily prepared to fight against us. Mm-hmm.
Were they telling them how to reign then?
That would stand to reason, yeah. And because Jehoiakim was put up by the Egyptians, I believe it was. And, but then he rebelled. And Zedekiah was put up by the Babylonians, but then he rebelled too. So there's, it's not complete compliance, but that's what they're hoping that. I mean, we've done that. The United States, the United States supported the rise of Saddam Hussein. And there's been other kings and leaders throughout the world that we have supported and encouraged the rise of, and in other cases resisted that. So it still happens today. Maybe a little bit more subtly than it did back in these days, but it still happens. Anyone else? Verse 8. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with a portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. They're given this special portion. The whole idea is that these guys need to be taken care of. They need to be, physically fit through this thing. Certainly they want them to be mentally swayed by all that's given to them and everything. And so all this provision is given to them. There's a guy that's in charge of this, appointed over them by the king of Babylon. So he's responsible for what's taking place there. And so they're given this food, and Daniel says, excuse me, I can't eat that. I'm not going to defile myself with the portion of the king's meat or the wine that he drank. Daniel purposed in his heart. When do you suppose Daniel made that decision? I'll guarantee you he didn't make it on the spot. You see, I think he had that purposed already back in Jerusalem, long before the captivity took place. He didn't make that decision on the spot. There was something ingrained in him, I'm not going to partake of these things. He understood what the Bible talks about wine. I'm not going to partake of that. I'm not going to partake of these foods that are forbidden of me in the Old Testament, under the Old Testament law. I'm not going to defile myself with those things. Long before the temptation came to him, he'd already purposed in his heart what he was going to do. And I think that's some of the struggle that we Christians have at times is we don't purpose ahead of time. We want to put it off till the moment. And you know what happens in the moment? You get caught up in it. The only way you're going to stand like Daniel did is to set those priorities long before the temptation comes. To have those things established in your heart long before that thing takes place. This ordinary meal became an opportunity to be a testimony. And notice what else it says here. Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor the wine which he drank. Therefore, he pitched a fit and screamed and shouted. He requested. I'm having a struggle right now with the Center Daily Times. My last two columns have been rejected. They refused to print. The first one that was rejected was, I don't know, about 6 months ago when I wrote about alcohol after the Anthony Piazza thing, and just talking about, the problem we have in this country is alcohol. It's not fraternities and so forth. And they wouldn't publish it. Well, that's not really the purpose of the clergy column. Not suitable for that. I had one on gun control just about 3 weeks ago, rejected again. No, not even telling me it was rejected until I asked, how come this didn't run? Well, we didn't feel that that was suited for the column. And I'm struggling with how to deal with this. And I responded and I said, well, could you please give me the guidelines then for the clergy column, what would be accepted and what topics that you feel would be inappropriate for that? Still waiting for an answer. But, it makes me mad. Because there's a lot of stuff they don't reject, both in the clergy column and other places. And I doubt that they will ever give me any list of topics that are forbidden. But they just choose to arbitrarily do that. But see, I need to have the right attitude in this thing. Daniel requested. And, you know, that's a challenge, isn't it? But sometimes we allow our flesh to get in the way and we get the wrong response. And then we blame it on being persecuted, when really it was our attitude that created the problem. Daniel requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Now, I think Daniel was still going to take the stand regardless of what the outcome of this would have been. But I believe he was wise in his approach to this thing in making the request. Let's see if they will be willing to listen to me. And of course, as we know, the story turns out they did just that. Verse 9. Now God had brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. There was a relationship that had already been established there. Kind of like with Joseph, first with Potiphar and then with the jailkeeper. Something about Daniel, something about the way that he conducted himself and he responded to various things up to this point, has putting himself in a place of favor with the prince of the eunuchs. So that he's at least willing to listen when says, "Sir, I have a request." Brought into favor with the prince of the eunuchs. And God had brought Daniel into favor and tender love. There was God working behind the scenes in this thing as well. But first, you can't ignore, I don't think, Daniel's character in and through all of this. Certainly God's at work back behind the scenes. But Daniel's got to be a yielded vessel in the hands of God to be able to obtain that favor in the sight of this prince of the eunuchs. Kind of brings me back to me. Because the temptation, the natural response is to get angry. And then allow that anger to speak instead of making a request. Young people, do you realize this is a good lesson for you with your parents? I mean, just think about it. Somebody comes up to you and gets in your face and just rebels against something. How are you going to react? And when you do that to us, we don't like it. But if you come to us with respect, with a request instead of the demand, the chances of us listening to you a little bit are going to be far greater. Daniel made a request. He'd gained favor. Verse 10, the prince of the eunuchs said unto Daniel, "I fear my lord the king who hath appointed your meat and your drink. For why should he see your faces worse liking than the children which are of your sort? Then shall you make me endanger my head to the king." Look, Daniel. Man, I'm with you, bud. I get it. Maybe you don't fully understand what's going on, but okay, I can see you got a problem with this, but here's my situation. The king said this is what you're supposed to eat. This is what the king has provided for you. And if there's a problem, my head's going to hang. I'm concerned about this. How are we going to do this? You got me between a rock and a hard place. So Daniel says this, verse 11. Then Daniel said to Melzar, whom the prince of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, prove thy servants, I beseech thee, 10 days. Let them give us pulse to eat and water to drink. So actually, let me just back up a little, back to what you asked there, Sarah. This is really the beginning of the, it's not 3 years into their captivity. This is at the very early stages of it, that this took place. And he says, okay, but, you know, give us 10 days, give us pulse to eat, water, drink, then let our countenances be looked upon before thee, and the countenance of the children that eat of the portion of the king's meat, and as thou seest, deal with thy servants, so I can send to them in this matter and prove them 10 days. Pretty calm, reasonable resolution, isn't it? Just give us 10 days, sir. You provide what we feel is acceptable to us. And you let, go ahead and take care of the others, give the others whatever is provided for them, what they're willing to take. And after 10 days, just take a look and see. After 10 days, if it looks like, you know, we're starting to get withdrawn and weak and lean and suffering from the diet that we demand, then you're free to do what you feel like you need to do. And it seems like he's willing to submit. I mean, he's making the deal. He's making the proposal. Here's what the agreement we're willing to make with you, sir. Just give us a chance. Let us see what God's going to do. That's faith. That's what we as Christians are supposed to do. Live by faith. Doesn't make sense. All that fine food and all the fatty stuff and all the good stuff, and we'll just have the pulse and the water. But we're going to put it in God's hands, because we're taking a stand that's going to honor Him. Because we respect what God has said. We want to follow what God has told us, what God expects of us. So before God, we'll let Him weigh the balance and see how it turns out. Any questions or comments? Faith. We're to walk by faith, not by sight. Let's bow for prayer. Lord, help us. Certainly we look forward to getting into some of the prophecy that's found in the book of Daniel and the things that are exposed there, and pray for your wisdom and help in giving understanding of those things. But Lord, may we not miss the important things that apply to our everyday lives. The importance of being willing to take a stand for Jesus Christ. Lord, there's some young people in this room right now about the age of Daniel at this time. God, my desire as a pastor is to see these young people having the courage to take that stand, some of which we heard about this weekend down in Virginia, that in their schools or in the associations that they have, the contact that they have with lost people around them, that their lives will be a testimony for you. That even as teenagers, that they will have established some biblical principles in their lives that they're willing to stand on. They have the courage to stand on. They have the conviction to stand on. God, Sometimes we older Christians lack that courage as well. Help us, God, to purpose in our hearts as well, to not defile ourselves with the things of this world, and allow your life to be lived through us, and to seek to glorify your name and lift up Jesus Christ, in whose name we pray. Amen.